Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, Stepping Up. My name is Sue Reed, and every week I provide a platform for people to tell their story of how they have faced and overcome a challenge in their life. Here is today's story. So my guest today is Penny. Penny is joining us from Cape Town in the lovely South Africa. Penny suffered from breast cancer, but she's been 5 years in remission now. It was invasive ductal carcinoma, which I understand can be quite invasive if it's not caught early. So Penny's joining us today to talk about her experience and how she managed to get over it and recover so well, because actually listeners can't see her, but she looks absolutely brilliant in perfect health. Apart from she tells me she's got a little bit of a cold today. So welcome to the show, Penny. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Sue, and thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
You're absolutely welcome.
You know, I do believe in the power of the spoken word and the power in listening to stories and hearing that, you know, even in your darkest hour, darkest moments, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Which is basically why I set this up as a platform for people to come on and tell their story of how they've overcome a challenge in their life. Because I think, A, it's very good for you as a person to get your story out and put it out into the world. And also, secondly, it's very good for people, as you say, that are in dark places to hear that there is light at the end of the tunnel and there are ways to come out the other side. So, I think it's a really good thing to be doing. So I'm quite pleased with myself.
You should be, Sue, because especially through our COVID times, people are going through very emotionally traumatic episodes, and so what you're doing is very much needed, especially today. So I thank you, and I thank you for having the platform that I can then share my story. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for that. That's lovely to hear. So tell us about the breast cancer then. So what did you notice first? How did it come about?
You know, I'll start by saying my mom had breast cancer 20 years ago. And there was never a time where I thought I would get breast cancer. You know, it just didn't even occur to me. So because of my mom's history, I went for yearly mammograms and yearly ultrasounds. And it was in between, I normally have my ultrasounds in August. And this was sort of in between my last mammogram and ultrasound. I'm coming up to my next one, and I'd bought a new bra with an underwire bra, and I never normally wear underwire bras, and I was fitting that on, and being quite plump, I should say, I had to get my hand right under the underwire and to try and get this new fandangled bra on, and in sort of trying to squeeze my boobs into the bra, I suddenly felt this round, hard lump in my left breast. And, you know, it was, I knew exactly what I was dealing with.
Right, because
and
of your mom.
Strangely enough, my cancer, what I had was not what my mom had. It was a completely different strain. My cancer was estrogenic, it's estrogen fed, and my mom had a completely different cancer. Right. So I don't know where the tie, you know, there is a predisposed history, but two different cancers. Yeah, and you know, within half an hour, my GP had got me into our breast cancer oncology unit, and as luck would have it, there was a cancellation. And you know, within a few days after all the tests, I had a mastectomy, and then and so it began.
Right. So that was quite fast moving then, from, you know, the health service point of view. Oh, no, it was lucky that there was a cancellation.
No, you know, it's amazing how sort of all the dominoes just fell into place. You know, even when I got in the car, we live in a little village called Noordhoek, which is it's about 45 minutes, an hour's drive into town. And I just jumped in my car, and every robot was green. There was not a red robot. So I made it to the Vincent Pilotti Hospital in Pinelands in under 20 minutes. That's unheard of. Wow. And I drive like a granny with a bowling hat. Yes. You know, So, and then the cancellation, so I got an appointment. I mean, so everything, you know, it was just that the universe was orchestrating everything to work in my favor.
Yeah.
So that was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. So then did you have chemotherapy?
Yes, I did. I first had, one has to first decide with the surgeon if you want to do a full mastectomy or a lumpectomy. And, you know, I just felt at, you know, I was sort of 55. I don't walk around in sort of low cut tops. My boobs are my boobs. You know, that it's not a symbol of anything to me, really.
Yeah.
And I discussed it with the family and I just said, you know, I'm not even going to attempt a lumpectomy, because what would have happened anyway? They would have had to have then done another operation. They would have had to have done the mastectomy, because the cancer had already gone into the nodes.
Right.
So I chose to have a full mastectomy, and I did ask about having my right breast off as well. But my oncologist said, you know, if something, you know, we don't fiddle with stuff that are not damaged, you know, So from the time I found my lump, which was on a Thursday afternoon, I was in theater on the following Wednesday morning.
Wow.
Then I had a 6-week recovery. And I must be honest, it was a very, very difficult op. You know, I've got a very high pain threshold, and it was, notwithstanding, it was a very, very difficult op. The pain was huge. Mm. Oh, wow. I was in hospital for 6 days. You know, it wasn't a case of losing the boob, which a lot of women battle with terribly. That didn't faze me in the slightest, but I think also, you know, there was such a rush and the adrenaline was pumping. It was, I was going from appointment to the radiologist to map out stuff. I mean, it was ongoing for 5 days. So I think, and then with a very, very big op, and then finding they had to take out nodes as well because it had gone into the nodes. I think that just, it hit me for a six.
I bet. Because I imagine that, because you didn't, for, you know, one day you there's nothing wrong, you're absolutely fine, and then you, of course, you find a lump, and a week later you're having your breast removed, which is a huge operation, and you didn't really have the time to process it. It was like, you know, here 1 minute, gone the next, sort of thing.
Well, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, you're not sick. You know I had no signs of having a possibly deadly cancer in my body. I mean, I just finished evaluating all my students that I work with at our university here. I lecture and evaluate students studying to be teachers. And I just finished the whole 6 weeks of pracs and going out for coffee with my mates. And then you find a lump. And on that, your whole life changes in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I think that's recovering after that op, it was so, so difficult. And so I had the op at 6 weeks, and then I started my chemo. I had a very hectic chemo regime. I had 3 sessions of what they call the Red Devil, which is the chemo where you lose all your hair. And that's every third week for 9 weeks. Mm. And then I had Taxol every Monday morning for 12 weeks. So I had 12 sessions of Taxol. And which then followed 30 sessions of radiation.
Wow.
So it was tough, tough, tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So that the whole process then lasted, what, about 6-7 months from start to finish?
Yes, I think a bit longer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when you got to the end of it, how were you feeling then?
You know, it was weird. It was, you know, I think as well, you're fighting a battle to survive.
Yeah.
And you're using every part of your body to cope. And you are on I saw it as going to war. You were going to war to fight the beast. You were knowing that you were having treatments that are really, really tough. But however, and just keeping your eyes on the prize at the end of the day. When I finished, it was also, you know, you, it, you, I didn't feel this absolute feeling of euphoria. Whoa, I've done it. You know, fist bumps, high fives. Mm. My body just sort of collapsed within itself. And I think it's just sheer exhaustion. And you're using every resource you have to survive.
Yeah.
And it's not only surviving physically, but mentally, emotionally, on every level. Yeah. So it was quite traumatic at the end.
I can imagine. It's like the analogy, if you go back to the analogy of the battle, the war, it is your body, your whole body is fighting a war against the cancer. And having won that war and got to the end of it, if you imagine an army, it would be exhausted, wouldn't it? It would be exhausted. It wouldn't have, any rest for a long time.
No, and you know, too, I think when you sort of physically and mentally planning to an onslaught that you are now going to slay that dragon, everything is on high alert. And you are just working at getting through each and every day, and your body's under tremendous pressure. And at the end, and I remember just feeling so exhausted. And what my children had done, they'd planned an end of chemo and radiation party for me.
Right.
And they had it at a restaurant and had all my friends, and they had dinner planned. And I just remember feeling, I don't know if I can do this. Mm. I felt so drained and so emotionally wrung out that I just want to do, like, get into my shell and just hide for a week so I can regroup, you know. But anyway, I put on a very brave face, and we had a wonderful evening. But it was so kind of them and so sweet of them to organize this beautiful dinner with about 60 of my friends. So it was really very special, and also special for those of the people that walked the journey with me, you know.
Because they've been in the battle as well, so to speak, hadn't they, from a mental point of view? Yeah. Because they didn't know whether you were going to make it or not. So they've got that mental trauma all the time.
Yeah. And at a time like this, your friends are very, very important. What I also did, and I do know a lot of people, I don't understand it. A lot of people seem to be embarrassed by acknowledging the fact that they have either breast cancer or some other cancer, and they don't want to share it with anybody or share the news with anybody. There were a couple of people having chemo with me who were hiding the fact from close friends. Mm-hmm. And I can't get my head around that. But you know, each to their own. But absolutely. You know, what is so important is the support of good friends and your family, because you're at your absolute worst, and you need people around you who are going to just... You don't want them to reinvent the wheel. They don't have to do anything specific, but you know that they're there. That's all. You know?
Yeah. But I think a lot of people, it's like, you know, everyday life, we are kind of programmed to help others first. So, you know, you don't help yourself, you help others first. So if you're somebody that likes to always give, and then you find you've got some, you know, a life-threatening disease, I can understand why, if you're that sort of person, you wouldn't necessarily want to put the burden on someone else. You'd rather carry it yourself. But that can't be very healthy from a mental point of view.
But you know something? What you're describing is exactly me. Because I am a person that if there's something needs to be done, I'm there like a bear. I'm there like white on rice. And I never thought the time would come where I would have to be humble to sort of accept help from other people. And so in this awful journey, there were incredible learning experiences for me. And that was one of the learning experiences, that we need to reach out to people who are there, ready to help when we need that help. And that was an incredible learning experience for me.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I've got a group of friends called the Friday Girls. And we've been meeting together. Some of us, we were at school together. So, I mean, we're in our 60s now. So we've been friends for 40, 45 years. And, you know, they were sort of just this quiet, wonderful support. where, you know, that sort of understood my need to be, you know, when you've had your chemo, the first couple of days are just, I don't even know how to explain them, but, you know, they sort of would just leave a bunch of flowers at the gate or arrive at the door with some supper for the family, you know, just those little touches, you know, you also realize the true value of friendship, because, you know, sometimes it takes a crisis for you to realize how important your friends are. I mean, just, it's an incredible, you know, if you've got to look at your life and think what are the best assets in my life, it has to be your family and your friends. You know, for me, that was the most, well, every day I just looked at my friendship circle and I just thought, well, I am so flipping blessed, hugely blessed.
That's lovely. That's really nice. And it's really lucky that, you know, you had those people around you. And I guess because you were a group that were more or less the same age, each of them thought, well, you know, that could be me, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Oh, absolutely. But not only that, Sue, you know, what I also realized, that cancer, even breast cancer, they were young girls in their late, there was the most, oh, I get sort of quite teary-eyed when I think of her. She was the most beautiful, beautiful young girl. She, you know, the singer Pink.
Yes.
She looked just like Pink did. And she was 28. Mm. And she had cancer in both breasts. And she passed away about a week or two after our, you know, we did chemo at the same time, and she passed away. And, you know, the scary thing is too, I am the oldest, you know, we've lost a huge amount of our chemo friendship group.
Right.
And I'm one of the oldest and still around to tell the tale.
Oh.
So, you know, that's also
very kind of bittersweet, isn't it?
Mm. And you know what you do, it's a well-known syndrome, it's called survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
When you are having chemo and you're sitting there and all your veins are all popped and they can't find veins and, you know, it's excruciatingly sore. Mm-hmm. And then you see a young girl walk in with all her hair falling out and you think, oh, my gosh, you do. You feel terrible. You feel, oh, my gosh, you know, why am I still going strong? And here's this poor girl. She's in her early 30s. She's got tiny children at home. You do. You go through many bouts of the survivor's guilt.
Yeah, I can imagine that. But we've all got our paths to walk, haven't we? And we don't get a choice.
No, and you're so right. And I think it also, you know, why am I here? Why did she pass away? Why did I not pass away? Well, maybe my work on this earth, as we know it, is not done yet, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So having survived and now in remission, do you think you've changed at all?
You are never the same going in to something like this as you are coming out. It's the changes are positive and the changes are negative. I started having the most horrific panic attacks during my chemo that I couldn't even walk into a shopping center. I used to wake up lying on the floor with the medical team around me. You know, I think I think your body has to have a trigger mechanism, you know, because you are coping on every single, you know, every single fiber of your body is coping to survive the onslaught of the chemotherapy, of where your headspace is. You know, you're on this sort of battle, you're walking this journey where you are just fighting this fight every single day. And I think that it has to have an outlet. And that was my outlet. And I still suffer from, I mean, I would never, if you said to me 10 years ago, you would have panic attacks, I'd laugh at you.
Yeah.
And I'm still on medication, anxiety medication. And I still see my psychologist. I have connect with her every 2 to 3 weeks, which I can only recommend to have somebody who understands and who is a support other than your family that you can actually say to her, you know, you can't say to your children, you know, I'm panicking that I might die. You can't say that.
No.
But I can say that to Leanne, who was just, and she is just an incredible force in my life. And I can share stuff that I can't share with anybody else, you know. Mm. So, yeah, and you know, you, I do. I'm like, when that my life has taken on a whole glow. It's more colorful. It's brighter.
Yeah.
I celebrate the smallest, tiniest little thing. You know, I am really happy to be alive. I am so grateful for my good health. I am each day, I mean, is just a phenomenal, phenomenal day. And I think that is what I've taken out of this journey is so big. And it's what I've also taken out of this journey is we have to remain positive.
Yeah.
Because I think we feed our fear. We feed the fear, or we feed the positivity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the story of the two wolves. You know, which one do you feed?
That's,
you know, the two
right,
wolves.
Yeah.
You know, that beautiful Native American tale. Mm-hmm. And you have a choice which one you're going to feed. And I've seen people who have gone through chemo and radiation for various types of cancer who are bitter, who are still, why did I have to go through this? You know, who are bitter, angry. You can't live like that.
No.
Because when you feed that fear eats away at your DNA. It eats away. It sucks all the goodness out of you. And it doesn't serve you in the slightest. And we have to feed what serves us. What brings us joy? And you do, you know, I made a decision for myself to deal with my cancer journey with a positive outlook and a positive mindset. The word positivity was very important to me.
Yeah.
And you fake it till you make it. You know, if you tell yourself it's going to be okay, I'm feeling like I want to curl up and possibly pop my clogs, but I'm not going to. I'm going to be okay. And the more you tell yourself, and you have these little mantras, the more you reassure your body that you're going to be fine, I think it has a huge, I mean, I might be talking the biggest load of hoo-ha, but it worked for me.
No, I totally agree with that.
You know, I just found being positive. And the sun starts to look to shine a bit brighter. And even in your darkest moments, you know, I always have such a giggle to myself because one day I decided, can't do this. No, end of the road for me. And I was trying to have a shower and I was so weak, I actually couldn't stand. Uh-huh. So I decided, no, the time's here. I'm going to put on my clean pajamas and lie on the bed and wait to be shafted up towards heaven in a bright white light. And, so I lay on the bed and it actually takes a lot of energy to when you're feeling sorry for yourself, when you're feeling revolting. So I thought, oh, well, listen, my time is up. I'm over. Lay on the bed in my clean. Why I put on clean pajamas, I don't know. But anyway.
You might as well look good.
But you want to lay on the bed. I'm saying, God, take me. I can't do this anymore. I waited and I waited. And then the dog jumped on the bed. And looked at me as if to say, what on earth are you doing? And then after about 5 minutes, I thought, no, what to bugger this for a lark. And I got up and I sort of went down and made myself a cup of tea. I did have a little pity party episode.
Yeah.
But you know what? It makes you feel dreadful. So it sort of exacerbates everything. You know, if you try and sit with your shoulders slumped for 5 minutes, that's flipping exhausting, you know? Yeah, so I went on a positivity splurge, and I must say, I do know that is what got me through this.
It's what got you through it, yeah, brilliant.
And a great sense of humour.
Yeah, yeah, well, they say that laughter is one of the best medicines, yeah.
Without a doubt.
But I think, going back to the battle analogy, I think if you're fighting a battle, you've got to, you know, if you're fighting in a real battle, you've got to know what you're fighting for. You've got to believe in what you're fighting for, and you've got to never give up. Whatever happens, keep going. And I think that fighting spirit, that positivity that you had, like you say, that's what got you through it. That, you know, don't ever look back. Just keep moving forwards.
No, absolutely. You know, if you don't believe it, how are your cells and your DNA going to believe it?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? You have to. You owe it to yourself. Subsequently, we've had 5 grandchildren, but I had my first little grandson was born. You know, what I did a mood board. And on this mood board, I put where I wanted to be a year after my cancer diagnosis. Brilliant. And I put pictures of my family in Ireland. I put pictures of the grandchildren. Music concerts, because we've got a great little farm village down here, Nodig, and we have lovely music events. So I had music concerts. And, you know, as Carole King says in her song, Tapestry, in times of deepest darkness, and so in those times of deepest darkness, I used to look at my mood board, my vision board. And, you know, if you shift your mindset and you say, okay, I'm looking at my mood board. This is where I'm going to be in a year's time.
Yeah.
And you then focus on a picture and say, oh, incredible. Art Matthews is playing down at Cafe Rue. That's where I'm going to be in a year's time. I'm going to be visiting my cousins in Ireland, which I did. I actually did everything on my mood board.
Brilliant. Well
and
done.
Yeah. So, you know, and that, and also another huge support in my life was music. Music has the power to, I really believe, a power to change the world, to change traumatic events. Yeah. So music was a huge part of my journey and my recovery, and it still is.
Wonderful, wonderful. So if somebody's listening to this and, you know, maybe is going through treatment or has anything wrong with them really that, you know, they're dealing with at the moment, what message would you leave them with?
You know, I want to say a few things. One is do a vision board. Do a vision board, a mood board, pictures out of magazines where you'd like to see yourself in a year's time. Another message I'd like to leave to people who are going through this is please, please, please do not research on the internet. Don't go to Dr. Google, because all that will do is freak you out, which is so, you know, because everything is worse on Google. You read, yeah, and if you, whatever you believe in, if you believe in, Say you get a breast cancer diagnosis on Monday. You've got to decide are you holistic and you want to then eat, go on a lemon juice cure? That's cool. If you are going to do the chemo and radiation cure, that's also cool. Believe in yourself and believe in what treatment protocol you will feel right for your body. Do not let anybody else try and sway you, because they will. Yeah. The nicest people will try to sway you, because everybody knows better. Yeah. And these people have never had to make a decision about, it's a life and death decision. And everybody has an answer. That's fine, but you do what you know to be right.
Yeah.
And I put the word positivity all over the house. My eyes caught sight of this word at least 25 times a day. And to me, to be positive is a very powerful weapon.
Yeah.
A very, very powerful weapon.
Yeah, I love that. And, I mean, I love that for, you know, for anybody in any, you know, any way, in normal life circumstances, I'd recommend that. That's a really good idea.
Absolutely. And you know something? It's so easy. You know, it's just shifting that mindset. You know, what I did as well, I put an elastic band around my wrist. And every time I felt I was slumping down into a pit of trauma and weepy, and I used to ping this elastic, so that it actually used to hurt me. And I used to change my thought processes from negativity to positivity. So I had like an active little sort of a switch.
Yeah,
that I should,
like a trigger.
Trigger. And you it's like, you know, Pavlov trained that dog. We can train ourselves.
Yeah.
As simple as that. And that's how I got through this. And also I made sure I didn't watch the news. I didn't tap into anything that was ugly or violent. I just listened to beautiful music, watched great trashy love stories on the TV, you know, things like that, you know,
yeah.
Because you are vulnerable. You are fragile. And so I just built that wall around me. And that's how I do believe that I came out of this with my positivity basket far fuller than the negativity basket.
Mm, that's brilliant. I think that's absolutely, I think it's brilliant advice for anybody. Like I say, brilliant advice, you know, whatever your situation is. So if somebody wanted to contact you for maybe advice or help or just to have a chat, how would someone get hold of you?
You know, I'm happy to talk to absolutely anybody, because it does. To talk to somebody who's gone through this and is still alive and kicking is very important. I can give you my email address, which is penchris, a small, all lowercase, PENCHRIS.
Right.
So it's penchris@iafrica.com. And I'll say that again, penchris@iafrica.com.
iAfrica.
Yes, it's Africa with a C, Africa, iAfrica.com.
Okay.
They are more than happy to get hold of me. I'm more than happy to chat on email. Or if they'd like to, we could have a WhatsApp call.
Okay, well, I'll put that in the show notes. So if anybody did want to make contact, that's how they would do it.
Absolutely. And you know what what I found is invaluable for me is seeing a good clinical psychologist. That has helped. And I mean, I still have trauma before, you know, I'm now only seeing my oncologist once every six months.
Right.
And before that appointment, I am still a nervous wreck. So I do honor the times that when I feel nervousness and feel tension and feel worried, those are the times that I do. And I find it's very good to have somebody that you can just touch base with, that you can just share your fears and your moments. And so I found that's also hugely beneficial for me.
Well, it's been absolutely fascinating to hear your story. And I think, you know, the key message is positivity will get you through, the darkest times, whatever's going on. And obviously, you know, the medical science as well, and all the things that medicine can do for you, but the positive attitude has to go with it, I think.
I know, but you know, I think that's half the battle, Sue. I really, really do think it's half the battle. Because our minds, I think we underestimate the power of our minds sometimes, you know. We can create a monster just as quickly as we can create a little floating on a cloud with unicorns and glitter. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think our minds believe what we tell it, and it will act on that. So, you know, if we tell our mind we're going to get through this, that message will then get through to your body as well. But if you tell your mind, no, I'm going to die, that's it, it's all over, then that's going to go through to your body as well. So,
of course, without a doubt. And I'm living proof of that. You know, I'm proof of when I was at my darkest time and then fell into that pit of, oh, woe is me, and oh, lying on the bed waiting to be beamed up Scotty, as opposed to just saying, okay, now we, you know, just changing that mindset. Yeah. Putting on some good music. Yeah. Sometimes just dancing around the room in your pajamas. I mean,
definitely. You know, yeah. Do anything. Yeah. Anything. Whatever. I think whatever occurs to you, do it.
And connecting with people who have been through this.
Yeah.
And can just lift you up, you know. And this is why I'm so, so grateful to you and this platform that you have here. And I do know there are people out or anywhere in the world who will listen to this.
Yeah.
And know that there is that light at the end of the tunnel. So thank you so much for having this platform available, because people really, really need it.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for being here today and sharing your story. And yeah, just thank you and good luck in the future.
Thank you, Sue. And I'm sure we'll connect and chat again at some other stage.
Definitely. Yes, we'll have to catch up and see how you're going. Yeah.
No, without a doubt. And it'll always be good news.
Okay. Right. So with that, I'll say goodbye and wish you well.
Thank you so much, Sue.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to today's story. And as always, if you want to ensure you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe. And if you yourself have a story to tell, then please do get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. And until next week, take care of yourself, stay safe, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.